When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And, you know, my husband said to me last year, why don't you walk the dogs at night? And I'm like, because I don't feel safe. And he just didn't realize that my day ends at 3 o'clock when in the winter. Wow. And so that, I think at the moment, the fact that a women's day is pretty much end at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon makes me angry.
Yeah, we're like prisoners.
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it. I'm Salima Saxton, I'm an actress and writer.
I'm Jennifer Cox, and I'm a psychotherapist. We noticed that anger is the one emotion that women aren't allowed to openly express. Meanwhile, everything around us is making us absolutely furious.
By talking about women's anger freely, we hope we'll inspire you to do the same.
Salima, What's made you angry this week?
Well, this relates back to a conversation I had with you. Well, actually, the two takes on my situation. When I say my situation, I mean my catastrophizing.
Yeah.
I had your take and then my dear friend Jemima's take. So Jemima is the sweetest soul. You know her as well.
Yeah.
And when I go, oh, my God, you know, that's, you know, I'm Chicken Little, basically. The sky's falling in. Jemima is so sweet. She goes, it's okay. Is it? Okay. Let's go underground. So anything I say, she goes, yes, of course. I'm sure the sky is falling in if you say so. So, but that's okay because I'm here, which is a beautiful friend who loves me very much.
Yeah.
You have a different take on the catastrophizing, which is very good for me. And I've had a little breakthrough this week because you pointed out, or let me come to the realization, that in a way, who am I to think that all the terrible, terrible stuff has to happen to me? It's quite an egoic, is that a word? It's
like, yeah, well, egocentric.
Okay, egocentric.
Egotistical. Cool.
Okay, it is.
Yeah.
Because who am I to put myself right in the middle of the disaster movie and say all the buildings, all everything, the tsunamis are all going to fall onto me? So I thought that was such a great take on catastrophizing because it let me sit a little, only a little bit, but a little adjacent to it.
Yeah.
Because the suggestion is that maybe good things and bad things and very neutral things can happen to all of us.
Yes. Yeah. And what it was good, I thought, as well, when we analogized it to people who think they've been haunted by a ghost.
Yes.
It's the same idea, isn't it? This thing that kind of basically doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Has happened to me.
Yes, because I had a neighbour actually years ago who said, oh, yes, I see ghosts. You won't see them. There's even one right here, right now in the sitting room with us. Can you feel it?
Brilliant.
And I was looking. She was like, you won't see anything, but I see it.
But I'm really special.
Yes.
So I see it.
And I think actually she was quite lonely and wanted to be special.
I'm going to introduce our brilliant guest. Our guest today is a powerhouse. She has 3 children and 2 pugs, around whom she squeezes her chief editorship of Glamour magazine. She's all about female empowerment and the challenges of working motherhood and speaks regularly on the topic. Please welcome the awesome Deborah Joseph.
So I'm going to delve straight in, Deborah, and ask you, what makes you angry?
Oh my goodness. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now because so much makes me angry that it's difficult to edit it down.
Great. It's what we love to hear.
I think since I turned 40, I've had this perpetual rage. It's just been, it's like everything I've suppressed my whole life is now coming out. And it's like, it just doesn't stop. It just comes out straight out of my mouth. And I'm constantly thinking you really need to stop doing that. But if I had to limit it to a few, just so we're not here all year, I would say, well, I was thinking this morning, the rage started at about 8:15 when my children won't put their shoes on. And I, you know, it starts quietly, you know, put your shoes on, brush your teeth. And they're like, yeah, 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 I'm doing it. And then like 3 minutes later, have you put your shoes on, brush your teeth? Yeah, yeah, I'm doing it. And then when I said it about seven times, the rage.
Yeah, the rage, I relate.
Came out and I did my usual, which is go, say, right, I'm going, I'm leaving without you. And I go out the door, I get in the car, I turn the car on and actually pretend that I'm driving out the drive without them.
That's my trick. That's my trick.
What that's happens if they come running out after
running,
you?
Running like crazy. Mm. I mean, God knows what my neighbours think, because it's the same thing almost every single morning, unless my husband's taking, in which case it's generally a much calmer situation. Yeah. I don't know how he manages it, but yeah, that's daily rage number one, I'd say. Rage number two, I think just the everyday sexism that we all receive. You know, I went to the doctor last week and I said something to the doctor that I'm feeling a certain way, and they're saying, well, you know, you are at that age, is it perimenopause? I'm like, well, for the last 3 years, every single thing I've gone to the doctor about, they've said is perimenopause, and I just don't believe that's the case. So just that daily dismissal of my feelings, and you know, not just that, just, you know, the way even my girls are spoken to, you know, one of my daughters has got a very big personality, and just, you know, she's had exams recently and interviews, and the advice was, you know, just tell her to pipe down a little bit. And that brought out the rage in me as well, because it's like, well, if you don't like the fact that she's very confident and outspoken and you want her to be meek and quiet, then she's not the right person for you, is she, really? Or she's not the right... So that kind of thing just really resonated with me as well, just constantly being told to fit into certain spaces and be quieter and smaller and all of those things. That started to really grate on my nerves as I've got older.
I've had some feedback sometimes about certain children about personality led things, and I think it is often because they are female that they're receiving that feedback. And I think with a boy, my youngest, who, as Jenny knows, you know, is a big character, everyone thinks it's hilarious and big fun.
They kind of embrace it, celebrate it. And I'm thinking about how you feel as if it's just quite lately that you've become really, you know, tuned in to this pattern in society. Do you think for you in your 20s and your 30s it was similar, and you were just basically sort of fitting into the mold and doing what you were meant to, and it's really only lately that you've recognized it?
Definitely. I mean, look, my family are Iranian. My mum moved to England when she was about 25, and you know, women within Iranian society are treated quite often, well, certainly a second-class citizens as it currently stands. And if you speak to my mum speaking about it, definitely a second-class citizens growing up. And I think that women perpetuate that conversation with their daughters because they don't want their daughters to fall out of line and get into trouble in some way. And obviously in a country like Iran, it can end up being a danger to you. So I think that the message was very much about be a strong woman, but also don't push it too far. You know, make sure your appearance is always the best it can possibly be, because then you won't be received as well by society. You won't find a good husband. You won't, people won't think you're appropriate in social circles. And so this was very much the conversation. You have to dress properly, and you have to always, you know, I never go out without a blow dry. You will never, ever see me without a blow dry. And that's very much that conversation about smoothing, literally smoothing the edge.
Not taking up too much space.
Yes, not taking it. My hair's curly, it's big, it's wide, naturally. And I think that's just how I was brought up. And it took me a long time, even though I was born in this country and grew up, you know, with more westernized standards. I think that... And obviously it's not great for Western women either in a lot of ways, but it's certainly easier than it was for Iranian women. I think as I've got older, I've suddenly realized that all of these things have been embedded in me, and I've got to fight them. I've got to stop these conversations in my own head. And certainly now I have daughters, I very much think along those lines. You know, I have to make sure I change the language that I use and not pass on those kind of internalized conversations that were passed on to me. My daughter has fabulously thick curly wow. hair, mm-hmm. and we've never straightened it. So I think I probably will at some point, so I can't help it. I'll probably try, but
yeah. Well, how does she feel about it?
She loves her hair. I've said to her before, would you like to straighten it? And she says, no, Mum, I like it curly. So I'm like, okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
how else do you think you feel you're passing on different approaches to your girls?
Oh gosh, in so many ways. Actually, it's not just my girls. It's my son as well, because it's all very well not putting ideas into your girl's head. But I think more importantly, you need to make sure that the boys aren't expecting something different of the girls.
True.
A lot of it is around the messaging I'm giving to my son. We've talked about Andrew Tate. We've talked about misogyny. We've talked about double standards. We've talked about no means no. And I've said that to my girls and my boy, no means no. Even if it's just a silly thing in our front room, no means no, either way. And I have that conversation every single day with them. And recently someone said that my son joke pushed a girl at a party, and I said to him, did you do that? And he went, as if I would, Mum, as if I would, after all you've taught me about feminism. As if
I believe him. Yes.
And I just thought, oh god, okay, at least you've taken some of it in.
Yeah, how wonderful.
Can we just ask more about your professional life, actually, Deborah? Things like anger, things like maybe an internalized idea of what's expected of you in the workplace, and maybe what in the past, I don't know, male colleagues, how they might have treated you, what you may have felt about that, what you might have felt able to voice. Like, do you have a history with work in this regard as well?
The fact that I think women weren't paid equally to men. And I was never paid equally. And I only really found that out later on in my career, that a lot of the jobs that I had, that men were doing similar jobs, I was paid probably 40% less.
Wow.
And I only found out when the company that I'm thinking of, I worked for, did a big kind of assessment of equal pay. And I found out, and the only reason I found out is because they increased my pay by 40%. And the only reason they would do that is because I was being paid 40% too little. And I actually said to them, if I find out that I'm now not paid equally to the men in the business, I'm going to go on Twitter and call you out. So that was my response. So,
but you think also, what about the back pay that you... Would you?
I did bring that up, and I was told that they couldn't do anything about what happened in the past. They could only change the future. Oh, so I've decided. But that's really the main area. I don't really feel. I think probably the biggest issues I had was being a woman that wasn't quite, you know, entirely white, and how I was treated, and also being Northern. I've had quite a few negative comments about my accent. And that's probably been the worst of it. I've been really lucky.
I'd love to know more about the race thing, actually. How was it for journalism then?
I mean, at one point I was probably one of the darkest people in my whole business. Wow. So, really? Yeah, I mean, you know, I really was. And thankfully that has changed hugely in the last 5 years, hugely, like dramatically. Mm. And it's been much more open-minded. There's a lot more people of all backgrounds, from socioeconomic backgrounds, and just a lot more diversity, which was very, very needed. Mm. And it's been reflected, certainly when I started at Glamour 6 years ago, having experienced the things I experienced and looking at a lot of magazine covers when I was younger, I never saw a woman of Middle Eastern heritage, not that I can remember anyway. You'd never saw black women on covers, because we were told that black women didn't sell. I mean, can you believe that crazy? This was the kind of stuff that you used to hear regularly. And I remember once going forwards with a woman who was from Brazil on my cover. She was a model, and showing it to my boss at the time. And he said to me, oh, she looked a little bit dusky. Can you find somebody else? And she was my colouring. She was exactly my colouring, and she had blue eyes. I remember. And I remember coming out of the meeting feeling so shit. Like, God, you don't think someone who looks like me is good enough for a magazine cover. And when I started at Glamour 6 years ago, that was my main decision. I thought, I'm going to make this a fully diverse brand, and you're going to see it in all our imagery, and I hope to be a more approachable brand so everyone feels that they belong, and, you know, to raise the voices of the different women. But, you know, it's not just on Glamour, you know, it's been happening across the industry, and that's so welcome, and I'm thankful for it.
But you are a very vocal supporter of all body shapes as well, and body positivity.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've loved reading. I read several articles that you've written about that. How are you navigating that, heading up Glamour currently?
Well, look, I mean, I'm size 12. I'm so far from size zero. I probably was. I was always a size 8 to 10 when I was younger, and since I've had kids, I'm a size 12. So I definitely don't fit into that kind of size zero fashion aesthetic in any shape or form. But, you know, again, it's about imagery. It's just making sure that there's visibility on your social media platforms and in the images. You know, we recently did something on lingerie, and all the images were very skinny women. And one of my team pointed out and said, you know, I want to change the imagery. And just the fact that everybody's thinking about that all the time is great. And when you see yourself reflected in the images of a brand, you feel connected to that brand.
Yes,
so that's how you create a community.
And also women in your position speaking about, you've written about the 70-30 idea, which I love.
Yeah.
I think it's vital that women like you in such extraordinary positions are saying it as it is. I think it enables people to feel it's attainable.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, my 70-30 thinking came about because I was really struggling when I first started at Glamour 6 years ago and didn't feel I could do it. I thought I had to give up my job because my kids were really young. They were 2, 4, and 6.
Awesome.
And my husband was setting up a business, so he was really, really stressed as well. I was really stressed. And we didn't, you know, I don't have parents here. My parents were in Manchester. My husband's parents were in Manchester. So we had no help. We had to pay for absolutely any bit of help that we needed. And at that point, you know, I had one in nursery and it's really expensive. And just the pressure on me was enormous.
Yeah.
And I thought something's got to give. And it was the pressure on myself that had to give. And, you know, these societal expectations that we have in our head, again, that I was brought up with from my mother, that I was brought up as a woman in any society, that, you know, if you fail at anything, then you're a failure. Even if you're succeeding 90% of the time, if you do one thing wrong, you're a failure.
Yes.
And so one day my husband said something's got to change. Either you give up the job and you stay at home and look after the kids, or you obviously, I'm not giving up my kids for the job. So, you know, something had to give somewhere. And I just thought, I'm going to just stop 30%. I'm going to give up 30%. I'm going to consciously drop the balls of 30%, and I'm going to focus on 70%. And it just meant saying no a lot more.
Within work, you were saying no a lot more.
It wasn't that I was saying no at work. It was more things like, you know, for example, my job is to look after the website, the social media, the events, and work with the commercial team and, I don't know, manage the team. There are some things that you have to do. So the video department at that time wasn't fully formed, and I didn't feel that I could give it the full attention. So I said to my boss, I'm not going to focus on video this year. I'm going to focus on the website and the social media this year, and I'm going to redesign them and I'm going to develop them. And then once they're sorted next year, I'm going to focus on video once the company's got its, you know, strategy down. And he went, okay, fine. Instead of absolutely lying in bed at night, which I was doing at the time, thinking, how am I going to do the video? I'm going to do the video. Instead of thinking like that, I just thought, I'm just going to be more strategic about it. I'm going to be honest about where I'm putting my attention and explaining why my attention isn't going there. And I do that now with everything. You know, I say no to friends. I say, I'm really sorry, I can't do that because I need to focus on this, that, and that. Mm-hmm. And most people understand it, not always.
Yeah, they really do. And I think also it's that thing of like, you would fully advise a friend, of course, these are your priorities.
Yeah, enough.
This is how you need it. Yeah, that's enough. Mm. Like, streamline, everyone will understand. But it's advocating for ourselves that is often so
totally.
And also surrounding ourselves then with the people who do understand, the people, I mean, obviously in professional world we can't always choose that, but elsewhere I've become so conscious of that over the last, I'm in my mid-40s now, I've really changed my tribe in many ways. And I'm so conscious of it being women who hear me, get me, hold me.
Yeah.
Me too.
You know what, as well, I think you can dare to say it in professional settings where you think you wouldn't be able to, but once you do, you realize, oh, the sky didn't fall in, it didn't all fall apart, it could get heard, but we don't, and so it doesn't happen.
And that's just having the power, being being conscious of one's power. You're Deborah Joseph, editor of
You
Glamour.
Can say it.
Oh, you can say it.
I think it's as long as you've got thoughts and reason behind why you're doing right. that thing good at work. And you know, sometimes just spreading yourself too thin at work isn't that a good thing. It's better to focus on a few things that you really, really want to achieve and focus on those and do them as well as you possibly can rather than doing everything at 70%. I do the 70% at 100% and drop the 50% entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than trying to spread myself across the 100%. So
yes, which is impossible.
Yeah, it really worked for me. It really worked for me. And you know, that's why I think I've managed to stay here for 6 years.
Can we return to anger? Tell us about a time, Deborah, that you got angry.
Oh my God, just one time.
If you can narrow it down.
Top hits. Yes.
Oh my God. I mean, I have a really quick temper. So I get angry quickly and then calm down very quickly and forget about it. Somebody has to, you know, have done something really horrific for me to keep that going for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, I actually do the opposite of anger. And I always call it like a white anger, which is go quiet. And that's even worse. Like if I'm angry, it's a quick thing in the moment and it's done and I've said what I've got to say or I've raised my voice and it's finished and I've moved on. But actually, I think the times that I'm really angry, you might not know about it.
Wow, steely.
Yeah, oh, I love this.
I think it's maybe when the small angers have built up and built up and built up over a period of time and then something happens and I'm like, I'm done. I'm finished. You might not even know that I'm finished, but I'm finished with the situation. And it might have been a friendship. It might have been a work scenario. It could have been anything, but that's probably not the great, that's not a great place to be with me because that's the point of no return. And
wow. I relate to this.
Falling out with people is, you know, I see it with the Middle Eastern side of my family and it's quite a thing.
I think also if one is quite passionate, you know,
if I'm with you,
you know,
I am the same.
And that's it. But if we're not, and I've understood why I'm not for whatever reason, people always say I have, you know, or Jenna said this, I've got this smiley little sweet face, but that's quite surprising. Yes.
That's me. And I think it shocks people because generally I'm quite happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
But I think once you cross the line...
Would you ghost?
Good question.
So I'll tell you something. I've been having CBT for the last 2 years and she has actually stopped me being as angry. And the way she stopped it, as I said, when I turned 40, I just found this anger was raging inside me. And it's really calmed down recently, which is what made me laugh when you asked me to come on this, because I thought I'm probably the least angry I've ever been in my life. And I think the reason is she told me, I think I've reduced all expectation. And because I've lowered my expectation of people, of scenarios, if you have no expectation of somebody, it's quite difficult to get angry with them.
Yeah, or offended.
Yes. So I think I've become much, much more able to cope with scenarios and not feel angry, which is why I'm kind of struggling to think of the last time I really got angry, because other than, as I said, shouting at my kids to stop gaming or put their shoes on or whatever it is that I'm shouting about, and to please not make me late for work, which is the reason I get annoyed in the morning, I can't think of the last time I got really angry with somebody.
Therapy works, clearly.
Well, I've never been into therapy because I've never liked the idea of going back in time and discussing, you know, did your mum breastfeed you and what does that mean? I'm really not interested what that meant, like stop breastfeeding me at 4 months and that must mean we have a terrible issue here. That just doesn't appeal to me personally, though obviously I know
dangerous ground.
Lots of people. So when I started having CBT, I was really clear. I was like, I'm not interested in going backwards. I just want advice of how to manage situations here and now. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being part, you know, emotional help, part professional help. And it just situations that have made me annoyed. It was just lower your expectation. Like, why do you expect that of somebody in the first place? And that's really helped me.
And actually, in terms of CBT in this kind of here and, you know, the here and now symptom that it addresses, the thing that is most powerful about it is the relationship. It's the therapeutic alliance. So I think just having the person there, and Salima and I talk about this a lot because I'm obviously her therapist on speed dial. It's just having the person there to soundboard with and to hear it back and to kind of get that perspective. That does wonders anyway.
I think it does. But you know, it's even things that I used to get really bad social anxiety. So if we were doing an event for work, the anxiety for weeks beforehand was off the charts. And again, I have no expectation now. So I don't go into scenarios imagining what it will be like. And then if it isn't like that, then I'm disappointed. I don't have that anymore. I don't have any image of what I think it's going to be like. I just accept it for what it's going to be and go in and enjoy it. And again, that's really helped.
Because also that's always the seed of all my catastrophizing, I think. I place expectations on...
Totally.
And then it never goes that way. No, of course it doesn't.
You know, you imagine yourself having a great time with somebody on the evening, and then they message you the day before and go, I can't come. And then your whole image is ruined.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Devastating. If you don't have that expectation in the first place, you don't get upset when people let you down. You don't get upset when the night doesn't go according to plan. You just have a great time, and that's helped me.
It's not luxuriating in storytelling, isn't it?
No,
because I have a real tendency. I'm brilliant at telling myself stories.
Casting myself, whatever.
And I often tell people, like, imagine you're kind of made of glass. Like, there's nothing in you. You just go into the room. You experience it. You take an interest in what's happening. You invest in other people. You're there for others in that sense.
Exactly.
And then you're not bringing all your crap basically to the events. Can we ask you another question, Deborah?
You can, yeah.
When has anger driven you to do something incredible?
Every day. I think my anger drives me every day. I think anger is really interesting for women, because actually I think it's quite a male state of mind, anger, and women are get upset or they cry. That's the way we're led to believe that society works. And actually, thinking about this, I think I've always been more comfortable being angry than I have been being vulnerable. So you'd probably hear me say I'm angry in the past, especially more than you ever would have heard me say I'm upset. And so I think every day things that I found unfair or, you know, if someone had a low expectation of me in my head, I've always thought, well, I'll show you, I'll prove it to you. And I think that slight in anger in the first place that they had low expectation of me or they don't see me how I want to be seen, I think that anger has driven that success. So it took me a long time to have children. It took me nearly 5 years. I was very infertile. I had to have 6 failed rounds of IVF.
Oh, gosh.
And I felt really angry with my body and with society. You know, I waited till my 30s to start trying for a baby, and I felt very angry that, you know, I'd fall into the trap of putting my career before family. I was angry about so many things. I was even angry with my mum for telling me that, you know, I might have had... not be as fertile as I want. You know, she had menopause in her 40s. I was annoyed with her for not telling me that. I was annoyed about the whole situation. And it just drove me. I just thought, I am not going to give up until I have a family. I didn't care whether in the end I did end up having 3 children, and carrying them myself. But if I'd adopted a family or if we'd had surrogacy, whatever it was, I was determined, and that was very much driven by frustration and anger. And so that was certainly one of those situations. But I think success is the best form of revenge. And so I think when I do feel anger, I just feel like I'm going to succeed at this, and I'm going to show you. And that's how I channel my anger. And I've done that probably my whole life. And actually, I'm trying not to do it now, because you shouldn't have to prove to somebody else how good you are.
Mm.
And
but still, as a propulsion, how magnificent.
That's definitely one of my biggest drivers has been anger. And I've never been afraid to say I'm angry. I really haven't. And I don't know, I think that's quite scary sometimes to people, the fact that women are happy to say I'm annoyed.
Yes, it's a strength though.
Well, I've only been able to start saying it since I've been doing this really with Jen. Jen's been training me up. I'm very easy for me to say I'm sad, I feel upset, I'm worried. I can say that very clearly to anybody, even now at 46, to say I'm angry, it's not that comfortable for me.
You and I've swapped personality because I've started saying I'm upset.
Okay, Okay, well, we're both.
We've gone the other way.
We'll meet somewhere in the middle.
All the emotions,
yes,
are allowed.
Yeah. So you go, Deborah, we're going to invite you into our virtual rage room, which is a quick fire.
I'm excited.
Yes. So go, Jen.
Current news item that can be national or local making you seethe.
The way news is told on TikTok. It's not one thing, yes, it's absolutely everything. I mean, my God, people are actually believing the news that they're seeing on TikTok. Like these really complicated news stories being driven to like a 30-second video. That makes me furious every single day. It really does. I think it's very sad for the state of all of us that's how a younger generation are being educated. It's not journalism, it's not truth. And it leads to so much misinformation, in fact, it worries me more than angers me.
Yes. Second one, aspect of modern life making you fume.
I think the everyday sexism and the everyday inequality for women, whether it's, just the fact that I have to say to my girls, watch out, you know, when you go to walk to the shops, watch out, there might be a man, there might be, keep away from cars. And when they're older, I'll say the same things that my mum did, which is keep your keys in your fingers, walk in the middle of the road if it's dark, cross the road if there's a man behind you. Mm. That just, the fact that I even have that conversation or thought with my kids, it's terrifying and it's really sad and it makes me angry. Mm. And, you know, my husband said to me last year, why don't you walk the dogs at night? And I'm like, so I don't feel safe. And he just didn't realise that my day ends at 3 o'clock when in the winter. Wow. And so that, I think at the moment, the fact that a women's day is pretty much end at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon makes me angry.
Yeah, we're like prisoners. Behaviour of others which gets on your wick.
Oh God, noisy eaters. I can't bear it. Oh God, it's when people's jaws click, or like when they slurp a hot drink, or like anything like that. It makes me want to be sick. I can't bear it.
There's a name for it, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I didn't realise I've got it. I didn't realise I've got it. Whatever it is, but I've got a real problem. Sometimes I have to stop eating at the table if people around me are too annoyed with their eating.
Misophonia, it's called.
Is that what it's called?
And finally, a current meme or slang that is making you rage.
Oh my God, the fact that my son and all his friends come in and go, "You're blurred." I'm like, what does that mean? And my name is Mum, my name is Deborah, it's not blurred.
That's a great one.
Thank you so much, That's Deborah.
Well, you've been brilliant. Yeah.
We've really loved talking to you.
I just want to pick up on what Deborah was saying about women's days ending so early and how that isn't understood really by men in general. So that being end of a day, literally like the dark arrives and it's not safe for us to be out, but also typically for women, the end of a school day. Everything finishes.
But also, this has been the incredible liberating thing about living in the middle of nowhere now, where I live, is that I wander up and down my lane.
There's no axe murderers.
Yeah, and I feel safe and I enjoy that. But it's a bit pathetic that I'm like, oh, yippee, it's 5 p.m. I can skip up and down my pitch black lane. But I do.
I think that's really liberating, and I wish that more women had that pleasure in their lives.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening and sharing in our anger.
And remember, you're not mad to feel mad.
Please like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.